Feeling lost in the lonely, meaningless cyberweb? Looking to connect with other users? Then plug in to a CITR collective. Meet users who are compatible with your interests and passions. CITR's mainframe offers 9 unique collectives: news, arts, accessibility, sports, persons of color, indigenous, gender empowerment, LGBTQ2SIA+, and music affairs. CITR collectives are where you can make great radio, great friends, and avoid the abject loneliness of life in the cyber void.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hi everyone, my name is Chrissy and you're listening to Season 6's All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm joined by my Accessibly Collective teammates, Richard, Anna, and Deepi. I hope everyone is staying safe and keeping well. The team and I have a really exciting and fun show for you today. Have you heard of the book Tony's Wheels? It is a children's book on sports and disabilities, as well as Filipino Paralympic athletes. We are thrilled to have Tony Flores and Mila Banco Filipsig join us. And to know more about them, you would want to stick around to the entire show. But before we chat with them, let's go to our first song break. Here's Richard with the first song.
Hi, Christy and everyone. Our first song of the show is Riot by Earl Sweatshirt and off the album, Some Rap Songs. Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was Riot by Earl Sweatshirt and off the album Some Rap Songs. About Earl, he's known as Stevie Kagositsil and is a famous artist that suffers from severe mental health issues. His music career has changed substantially since encountering depression and anxiety. His hope is with hip-hop emergence of artists with disability and with acknowledgement of mental illness, there will be space for people with physical and mental disabilities.
Thanks, Richard. Now we are pleased to start our show topic, which we are chatting with Tony Flores and Mila Banco Filipsig to talk about a children's book called Tony's Wheels, and it focuses on sports and disabilities. Mila and Tony, welcome to CITR's All Access Pass. We are so thrilled to have you two here. And thanks so very much for joining us and taking time to speak with us. Our first question, just besides being an author and a Paralympic athlete, so who is Mila Bonko Filipczyk and who is Tony Flores?
First of all, thank you for having us. It's such a pleasure to be invited in this show to tell about our story, to tell about the book. First, I'd like to make a correction. I'm not a Paralympian. There's a difference between a Paralympic athlete and a para-athlete. Although I've never competed in the Paralympic Games. However, I've competed in high performance. I'm a member of the national team in para-canoe. I was a national champion in sprint kayaking, single man, 2009, I believe. And I've competed in high performance in cross-country skiing, wheelchair racing, and sprint kayaking. Competed in 3 world championships in para-canoe. Anyway, who is Tony Flores? Other than a para-athlete? Interesting question. Well, let me establish this. I have a disability. I had polio when I was 1, affected my right leg. Also affected my left leg. I'm quite fortunate that I'm still able to use my crutches, able to walk with my crutches. However, now as I age, I rely more and more on my wheelchair. Immigrated in this country, very blessed, fortunate to immigrate in this country 36 years ago with my mom and dad, my siblings, very thankful to my oldest sister and my brother-in-law, who sponsored us to come to this country. And I was able to pursue my education, University of Alberta, where Mila and I met many, many years ago, and pursue a career in the government, pursue a sports life that I truly enjoy. You know, as a person with disability, I was able to live independently in this country, you know, have a career, live independently, traveled on my own, and lived like as everyone else, you know, and really being able to give back as well to the community. You know, this community, it's Edmonton, is great, and I was able to volunteer with a sports organization and other organizations, and also giving back to my home country, you know, through sports. So it is. Sports really open up many opportunities for me, like where I'm at now in my career as a disability advocate, the first disability advocate in this province. So that's a privileged role, you know. It's a big responsibility, and I take this role seriously. So I guess that's Tony Flores, aside from being a para-athlete.
Thanks for having me as well. So I'm work-wise. Senior project management with Stantec Consulting. It's an engineering and architectural group that's founded in Edmonton, but it's now global. At work, I'm part of the Inclusion and Diversity Council, and I lead the People of Color subcommittee. This has just been newly established in our company, and I'm very happy that I'm part of the newly established advocacy for inclusion and diversity. I'm also what you might call a community connector. So a group called Philippine Edmonton Ideas and Events and Art Society. And what we do is we try to connect various organizations so that we can hold a Philippine Fiesta, and then we can have performers, local performers, local businesses. Like, we just help promote each other. I run and I guess that's it. That's all I have.
Awesome. I know that you're both from the Philippines, so I was wondering, what was it like for you when you came to Canada, and did you two adjust to the Canadian culture right away, or were you in kind of a culture shock and needed time to comprehend everything?
You have to remember that when I came to Canada, it was pre-internet days. Okay, so there was no way to research where Edmonton was, how Edmonton was at the time, what to expect, and so on and so forth. So it's usually the weather, the culture, the locations, and Edmonton at the time wasn't diverse at all, even at the university. So there was a lot of adjustments to be had. And at that time, because I felt I was the one that had to adjust because, you know, I wasn't as educated that everyone had to learn more about each other. So I felt that I had to adjust. And I had to also improve my language skills. The idea of the relationship with your professor, it was more formal back in the Philippines. So here it was more informal, where you could call your professors in their first names and you could go out from have coffee with them and so on. So that was a shock to me. My first year was mostly with the university group, and that helped me adjust because I guess in a way at the university or where I was in comparative literature where people were coming from all over the world. It was more diverse than the actual community or the actual population of Edmonton. So yes, there was a lot of culture shock and adjustment that I had to do.
Yeah, similarly, you know, I remember, you know, when we landed here in 1984, I was in grade 12, you know, they assessed my school credentials from the Philippines, and they say, okay, you're in the grade 12 level here. And it's, you know, middle of winter on crutches. You can all remember, I remember the bus, the school bus would let us off across the field to our high school. And I remember I would cross that field in the middle of a snowstorm, you know, thinking, you know, on crutches, you know, the field is covered with snow, not realizing that underneath the snow is really solid ice. And I would fall, and, you know, the other students were kind enough to help me get up, you know, and then fall again. So that was quite a challenge. I eventually learned to adapt, you know. Another thing I remember, this is cultural shock, when, you know, I was told on our walkway, we used to live in a condominium there, and on a walkway, it was icy. Somebody told me, oh, you should sprinkle with salt. This is embarrassing, but I would have to tell you, I sprinkled with table salt. So that was a bit embarrassing, but I was wondering why my neighbor was looking at me strangely. So so that is sort of a first, I don't know, few weeks of adjustment in this country. But, you know, eventually we learn to adapt, you know. As a young lad then, you know, it's easier to adapt than when you're, I suppose, you're older. So yeah, I made friends naturally. And, you know, one great thing about the Filipino community here is that they welcome you like their family, you know. So even, you know, at that time, I also played a piano. So at that time, you know, I remember, because we didn't have a piano then in our condo in Sherwood Park, is that this Filipino family in Sherwood Park would pick me up every weekend so that I can practice piano at their home. So that was really kind. So, you know, that adjustment, yes, there were some challenges, but I think overall, it was a beautiful experience adapting to this new country.
Yeah, I went to Edmonton once in the winter, and all I remember is like how cold a place can get. Yeah. So you guys said you met at university. Yeah. And can you elaborate a little bit on how you guys met?
So I was a graduate student at the university at the time, and Tony needed second language certification. And somebody approached me, and because I was already pursuing my graduate studies, and said, they asked me if I am qualified to give a second language test for an undergraduate. And I was. And so I gave Tony test for a second language certification as an undergrad at the University of Alberta, and it was for Filipino. And that was how we met.
So that's quite interesting. You know, I was in the BA, Bachelor of Arts program, and, you know, I needed second language. But because I moved here, because when I moved here, I was right on grade 12, I didn't have French when I was in high school. So when I entered university, I had language deficiency. He says, you need second language. We're going to expel you if you don't have a second language. I said, what are you talking about? English is my second language, you know. So then for urgency reasons, you know, I found Mila, hey, can you give me some examination on Filipino so that I don't get expelled to university? So that's how we met.
So this question is for you, Mila. When you wrote this book, Tony's Wheel, can you elaborate a bit more what the book is about?
Tony's Wheels is a book about a boy with polio who came from the Philippines and immigrated to Canada. And when he was in Canada, he learned how to use the wheelchair for wheelchair racing. And then he got trained so that he could join the Canadian national team to compete in another country. And while that he was in another country, he met other para athletes from the Philippines, and he noticed that their equipment was not they were not as good as his own equipment from the Canadian national team. And so he had this idea to collect racing equipment and donate it to the Philippine national team. And it was inspired by Tony's true-to-life story.
That sounds fantastic. And also, Mila, when did you start writing? Like, it sounds like you've been in, languages at university. So when did you start writing, too?
They said that you can call yourself a writer the moment you get paid for something you wrote. If that's true, then I started writing when I was 16, back in the Philippines, when I got all of the equivalent of $5, I guess, for a love story that I wrote that got published in a magazine. But then, you know, life happened, and I started writing maybe seriously about 4 or 5 years ago, when I had 2 other children's books published in 2016. And those children's books are also bilingual, English, Filipino.
Mila, I was also wondering, why did you want to write this book, Tony's Wheels?
I wanted to write this book because Tony has always been an inspiration to me. Like, I have heard all his challenges and struggles in training for all these various sports that he was doing, and that, para athletes and para sports are not getting the same attention and the same funding as sports for able-bodied people. And So all throughout that, he would be telling me his stories, as well as the people, younger people that he's inspiring and helping train. And I thought it was just such a good story, you know, of somebody who came here, had an opportunity in Canada to pursue to become a para athlete, and then to give back to your old country or to your home country to help the para athletes out there. And I thought that that was such an inspiring story, and that it was good to tell the people what Tony has been doing all his life, and it's also a good immigrant success story. And we don't have a lot of children's books about immigrants yet, in my point of view.
So again, Mila, this question is for you. What was the process of writing the book like for you?
When I wanted to have this book published, I also wanted to mentor an illustrator, somebody who has not illustrated for a children's book yet. And I found this young Filipino here in Edmonton. His parents were from the Philippines, but he wasn't born in the Philippines, and he wanted to reconnect with his heritage, with his culture. And he was also an artist, and I thought that if he could do the research for this book and understand what it was like for somebody from the Philippines to immigrate to Canada and then to succeed here, then that would also be a good chance for him to illustrate. First of all, illustrate a children's book, add that to his resume, and then reconnect with his heritage by having to research, you know, all the details that should go while illustrating this book. So I thought that was a good process, because he was really thankful for the experience to add that to his resume, as well as reconnect with his heritage. And then he kept it as a surprise for his family. And so his parents were so happy when they found out that he was actually illustrating a book about a Filipino immigrant coming to Canada and finding success.
Yeah, that's really great to hear. Like, as a second generation, like, Filipina, I thought that's really nice that you gave them opportunity to illustrate the book. Kind of ties in with our next question about why a children's book exactly. Like, I know you touched upon how there's not a lot of children's book about immigration stories, and also disability stories as well. So yeah, if you wanted to add more.
As I mentioned earlier, I already have two children's books, and they're also about immigration stories, coming from the Philippines and then going to Canada. So one of the book is called Sandy Beaches to Snow, and it's about a Filipino child, you know, thinking about going to a place where there's winter and they don't know what winter is all about. And so I went on a tour with this children's book. I went to Winnipeg and Toronto. I went to libraries, and I went to classrooms, and the children there, those with roots that are not from Canada, so they came from somewhere else, and they were so excited to see somebody from born in a tropical country, and then having all this nervousness and excitement and the fear of leaving their home and then coming to a new country and then dealing with winter. And they were also asking me, are you really a writer? Are you really an author? And I thought that was such a good thing to tell the children, that yes, you can be a writer, you can be an author. And in Tony's wheels, you know, you can be an athlete, you can be an illustrator. And these are all people from our community, you know, who are able to do this. You can think outside of the usual career that you see around you and aspire to do something else that you've never thought would be possible, you know, mm-hmm. just from that environment. So that's why it was important for me to be a children's book because I wanted to reach the children when they were still young and say, hey, you can be all these things. And you can also learn the stories, success stories from your community.
Yeah, that's so great. Thank you so much, Mila and Tony, for sharing with us. So please stay with us, but let's go for a second song break. Richard, take it away.
Thanks, Christy. Our second song of the show is Repetitive by Sarah Jickling and her Good Bad Luck and off the album When I Get Better.
He says he lives for worse. Worse will be the death of me. They take me down with their accuracy and pierce me like a bullet. I wanna hear ayo, ayo, ayo. I don't wanna learn new things. I just wanna forget all the things I already know with that ayo, ayo, ayo. I don't wanna feel real things. I just wanna forget. Your breath until your lungs begin to scream. Think cliche, soothing, baselines moving. Empty words are wonderful. They come on, do sing. I wanna hear my heartbeat turn up the drum machine. I wanna hear myself think. I wanna hear him sing. Ow, 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 oh, 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 oh. I wanna sing with the chorus, forget that I'm alone. Ow, ow.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was Repetitive by Sarah Jickling and her Good Bad Luck and off the album When I Get Better. Sarah is a Canadian songstress and mental health advocate, known for her candid look into uncomfortable subjects, served with an indie pop smile. In 2017, Sarah released her first solo album, When I Get Better, which documents her journey through bipolar recovery. Jickling's idiosyncratic songs have been featured on radio stations across the country and in independent films. And she has opened up about her experiences with mental health, mental illness on radio, local television, podcasts, blogs, and at live speaking events. She currently lives in Vancouver, BC. Also, Sarah was a guest on All Access Pass, and you can check out the podcast by going to citr.ca and typing in All Access Pass in the search box. Sarah's interview was in our January 27th episode.
Thanks, Richard. So to reintroduce our guests again, we have Tony Flores and Mila Bonko-Filipczyk, who are here to talk about a children's book called Tony's Wheels, and it focuses on sports and disabilities. So now I have a question for Tony. Being the inspiration for the children's book, what was your reaction after reading Tony's Wheels?
Well, first of all, Mila and I, you know, her husband, her son, at times we would hang out before this book, really. We would hang out in the backyard of their house, you know, on, you know, or around fire, you know, go for coffee, you know. And like Mila said, I would share my travels, my stories, you know, the joy and challenges of being a para athlete and things like that. And I didn't really realize that, you know, we talked about writing this book, but I thought we were just fooling around or writing a book, really, nothing serious, you know. And here you go. And then she finally sent me a few months ago, hey, it's finished. And look, it's already published. I said, oh my gosh, I'm not expecting this. And then there you go. And, you know, a request for interviews like this. I said, was this part of the deal? I thought we were just going for coffee and chat about this. So, and of course, I'm humbled by this being chosen to be the subject of this book. I'm quite honored and humbled, and of course, and thankful, because I hope that this book will inspire others as well to pursue whatever they want to pursue, you know, that things are possible if you set your mind to it, you know. Just being able really to think outside of the box and, you know, as newcomers in this country, as immigrants, you know, the focus is education and career, you know. And you know, and make money and have family and have nice cars. So I chose, you know, I took the other path, you know, like Robert Frost, the road not taken. I took the other side of the road. So, and it was really a joy, journey. So I'm quite honored by being the subject of this book. So yes, so thank you for Mila, but of course she's my friend too. So I don't know, maybe there's something about that.
Yeah, it's true about being an immigrant and being expected to follow a certain road. I'm also an immigrant myself, and trying to choose the other side of it too right now. Yeah. And so can you please tell us, what is the training process like for you as a cross-country skier?
Yeah, well, when I pursued my sports career, I decided to have a career myself as a working career, because I knew that life in sport is not long-term. You know, I needed something to fall back on. You know, despite that I enjoyed sport, I wanted to make sure that I have a safety net when the sports life is over. And I'm quite fortunate. I did not regret that choice. You know, there was a lot of work, because get up at 5 in the morning, you know, you would do your training at home, do your weights, or even I'm at the gym at 6 o'clock, you know, doing my weights. And so I would be at work at 8:15, off work at 5, at 6 o'clock, I'm cross-country skiing on the local park over here, doing 10, 15 kilometers a night, you know. So you do that five times a week, and then you have a long distance training on Saturday it's about 45 minute drive from Edmonton, an outside part of Edmonton. But fortunately in Edmonton, because the temperature in Edmonton is quite consistent in the winter, that the snow stays. So within the city itself, about 15 minutes from my home, that I'm able to access a pretty decent cross-country ski trail. That was convenient. But yeah, I mean, if you want to be a high-performance athlete, that's the requirement to be one, you know? And I was committed. I really appreciated the acceleration. I appreciated the pain, you know, the soreness in your body. It felt good, you know. And you know, cross-country skiing, by the way, I'm a sit skier, you know. So I ski on a sled, and I double pole, you know, all the time. It's double poling, so your arms don't get rest at all. You keep pulling. I enjoy that part of my life.
Wow, that's awesome. That's super inspiring. Thank you so much for telling us about your training process. And I was wondering, how did you become interested in the first place with cross-country skiing?
You know, I started with wheelchair racing really early on. As an immigrant here, you know, I've seen, I'm not sure if you heard Jeff Adams then, you know, the popular wheelchair racers, you know, Chantal Pellicler now, who is a senator. And I've you know, I would watch them on television. And I said, oh, I wish, you know, I would like to be competing with these guys, you know. And before you know it, you know, I met some guys here that introduced me to wheelchair racing. And before you know it, I'm traveling in Toronto on a starting line with these guys, you know. And it was, so over that time, you know, I met many people in that community who transferred from wheelchair racing to cross-country skiing, you know. And then that's how I got into cross-country skiing. And I got introduced. And how convenient it was for me, because Edmonton was a great place to be a cross-country skier, you know. And I really wanted to have a winter sports activity, you know. We have a long winter season in Edmonton. And I truly enjoyed it, you know. Even training, sometimes I wondered, as a high performance athlete, you know, rain or shine or blizzard or not, you know, you go out training. So sometimes I'm out in the bush, you know, training. But I wonder, who the heck is this Filipino guy, you know, in the middle of the bush doing cross-country skiing, you know? I said, maybe I'm the only Filipino with a disability who's doing cross-country skiing. And enjoying the landscape, enjoying, you know, the perspective from a sit skier, you know, because you sit much lower and you're able to appreciate the picturesque of the trails, you know, from white to the brown sticks of the trees, you know, racing up to the sky, and you see the blue sky on top of you. It's such a beautiful scene, you know, and you can see, you can hear the chirping of your skis on a frozen It's just a beautiful experience, you know, and you have that rhythm, you know. You have that, and you get really get into that rhythm, and you focus on the movement of your body, and it's really peaceful, you know. So that's how I fell in love with the sport.
Okay, so Tony, you kind of mentioned earlier about some life lessons that cross country skiing has taught you, but are there any more things that you can add that this sport has taught you?
Absolutely, yes. Sports, the discipline of, like, the values in sports, you know, the commitment, the focus, the discipline, the respect, you know, the pursuit of excellence, you know, those translates outside the field of play. You know, and we can really apply those to other aspects of our lives, you know. That's how I really appreciated sports. You know, the journey I appreciated more than the pursuit of winning, you know, the people that I've met, you know. And also sports is really empowering, particularly with the disability, you know. So person with disability, you know, we've grown, we've lived with complexes, you know, we have to deal with our own issues, and really sports really help empower me to break through those complexes, you know, those like improve my self-esteem and things like that. And, you know, I became a bold individual, you know, being able to be expressive and being able to articulate and express myself and things like that. So the values in sports, yes, indeed, really, and the empowerment of sports really, I think, helped brought me where I'm at now as an individual and as a person and as a disability advocate. It opened really many opportunities for me, and understanding issues about disabilities and things like that, and speaking about it openly. I really encourage anyone, particularly with those with disabilities, to pursue some kind of sports activities and having a discipline, you know. Similarly with music, I also play music and I compose now, and you know, it brings, you know, there's something about spiritual about music. I think music and sports has both benefits, or arts itself, you know, because sports really, we might think about really it's physical, but it's really, there's a lot of spiritual and soul searching, I suppose, when you're really passionate about sports, similarly as in arts and music. So
yeah, thank you for sharing all that, and your like description about like the snow was really nice to like just visualize. But yeah, growing up, have you like always considered becoming an athlete, or like did you have any other aspirations in the Philippines or in Canada?
You know, in the Philippines, it's you know, I live in a small town, not in Manila at all. I live in a country, you know, where as a person with disability, you know, I was fortunate that my parents were middle class, you know, but still in the countryside, you know, where there's really not a lot of opportunity. It's not even accessible, right? But we have this, I was born and raised in this small town where there is this majestic volcano. It's called Mayon volcano. It's a perfect cone volcano. So it's a beautiful landscape. So I love to draw when I was a child, you know. So I pursued architecture actually before I moved to Canada. But somehow that didn't happen when we moved to Canada, and changed my thinking of pursuing, you know, sports career in the country. But my other aspirations now, as your question is, do I have other aspirations other than sports? Was that the question? Correct?
Yeah, like just growing up, did you have, what other aspirations did you have?
Yeah.
I'm sure you have a lot.
Yeah, I wanted to pursue architecture. At the same time, I was trained, I had a private tutor at that time, and I was trained as a classical pianist, you know, but I was really never good at it, because I remember my tutor would slap my fingers when, you know, my timing was was bad, you know. She had a ruler. Keep in mind, this was like 40 years ago or more. Different way of teaching then. I loved to play the piano then. But I wasn't really a technical pianist, so that career was off.
So you mentioned that you wanted to meet all the para athletes that you saw on TV, and we were wondering if you ended up meeting some, and what was it like, and can you tell us about some memorable encounters?
Yeah, so this is interesting. Although I said I was not a Paralympian, however, I've been to the Paralympic Games 10 times since 2010, both winter and both summer and winter. Started in Sydney, Paralympic Games in 2000, in year 2000, until Pyeongchang, winter Paralympic Games. I have a unique role with the International Paralympic Committee, and I was a director general of this award called Hwang Yeondae Achievement Award. It's named after a doctor, Korean doctor, Dr. Hwang. This award is given to only two athletes at the Paralympic Games, both winter and summer, to someone who most exemplify the spirit of the game. So I was in charge of the operation of this award at the Paralympic Games. Both promoting the importance of this award at the Games, responsible for the nomination process, the selection process, you know, and the presentation of the award, all the works behind the scene of this award. So I was privileged to be able to spend time with the nominees and the finalists for this award, because, you know, I had the privilege to interview these athletes, how they were able to overcome adversities and yet demonstrate excellence in sports, and were able to perform excellence at the Paralympic Games, you know. So it was very interesting to learn and understand about their journey, you know, and at the same time maintain the integrity of the sports, you know, like what I was talking about, the values of commitment and discipline and respect and excellence and all that stuff. So I was able to answering to your question, I remember this young athletes from Kenya. Her name is Mary, and she was one of the recipients of this award in London Paralympic Games. Mary was from Kenya, and she, I believe she had polio, and she was discovered, she was a medalist in javelin, you know, in javelin, and she was discovered in Kenya throwing rocks on the riverbanks. You know, somebody saw her. I said, "Oh, this girl is a pretty good thrower." You know, And then she was given an opportunity to train in Kenya and start winning events, you know, winning in competitions, and started participating in national and international events. And after that, she was being recognized in the country, and then she was awarded actually a wheelchair, because keep in mind, when she was discovered throwing stones by the riverbank, she was crawling, you know, she didn't have, you know, she was just, you know, either walking like a squatting position or dragging her bum. So now when she came back, she ended up being awarded with a wheelchair, you know, and then created a movement in their country that women with disability she created a movement where women with disabilities learning to play basketball and create a basketball team. And, you know, those women participated, you know, now representing their country and competing in wheelchair basketball in the Paralympic Games. So those are quite inspiring, stories. That I was really fortunate to be able to act on this role as Director General of this Hwang Yondai Achievement Award, because I was able to learn so many stories, inspiring stories, overcoming adversities.
Wow, yeah, that sounds like an incredible, incredible experience and story. Going back to your book, I was wondering, what is one thing you'd like to achieve with Tony's Wheels?
One thing I appreciate about this book is because it's a children's book, you know, particularly now that I'm a disability advocate, you know, breaking down barriers, breaking down a stigma, you know, breaking down assumptions about disabilities. That my hope, given that this book was written in a children's book form, that it's really symbolic. It really represents, you know, about the future. That, you know, children who will be reading this book will be have a better sense, understanding that, you know, regardless of your abilities, really, regardless of whether or not you're a newcomer or you're an immigrant to this country, if you set your mind to whatever you want to pursue, that it is possible. Also brings awareness that, you know, regardless of your abilities, that you can do whatever you want to do. You just have to set your mind to it.
Very well said. I couldn't have said it better. Thanks. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you.
So my question is, what is one piece of advice you would give for aspiring para athletes or cross-country skiing or skiers?
Regardless of what you want to pursue, make sure you have to find enjoyment, you know. You have to find love and joy to whatever you're doing. Otherwise, you know, you have to find that fire in you, right? Otherwise, it's not worth it, you know. You have to find passion, you know, in whatever you're doing. What is your purpose? I think that's what I would advise. But I think how you do that, I think it's important to mentor. Mentorship is really key. You know, I was fortunate that I was surrounded with athletes that, hey, Tony, you should try this out, you know? It's so funny when I started, you know, the people with disabilities, I was really clueless about, you know, as a new immigrant here, again, your focus is education and career. You know, I was clueless about sports at all, particularly disability sports. Come on, give me a break. And when I was exposed to, when I met these guys with disabilities, that really encouraged me to hey, Tony, let's try this out. You know, let's try it, you know. And did not give up, you know, and did not give up until I tried it. And then before you know it, we started traveling. We were in Europe, in the Alps training, and we were talking, hey, remember? Hey, remember Colette, when you got me into sports? Hey, remember Alan, when I was throwing up and, you know, in the bucket because I could not I could not catch my breath, you know, when I started. So, and then, yeah, you're in Australia, you know, you're in Japan competing with these guys. It was so cool that, you know, you need to find a mentor that will support you throughout, you know. And there are people like that. Other people might say, where, you know, connect with your local organizations, you know, pair sports organization. They are people that are passionate and dedicated, you know, but you must also show interest, you know, you must also show commitment. In every privilege, there is responsibility, you know, and we all must be accountable to that. So I guess that's my advice.
Yeah, thank you for that. Really great, wonderful advice. The next question we have, this book is inspired by a true story. Can you give an example of an event that occurred in real life as depicted in the book?
Yeah, okay. First of all, the book really is about, in my view, is about really it's about an immigrant who was able to find their niche in this new home, you know, and become successful and being able to give back, you know. So, you know, I remember, I read this book again before the show, and I remember meeting other Filipino athletes during my travels. You know, I remember when I was in Japan, you know, I was there for a wheelchair marathon and realizing that, you know, I met a Filipino guy there who was there also to compete for a marathon, realizing that I'm very fortunate, first of all, by the way, in this country, because, you know, I have my wheelchair, my racing chair, you know, aluminum, carbon fiber, you know, all the top end stuff, you know. So, and then going to international competitions like in Japan and meeting this guy from the Philippines and his wheelchair, his racing chair, and the front wheel really was cut out plywood with nailed rubber around it. And I realized, oh my God, this guy, and on wheelchair racing, you have this very specialized push gloves to push on the push rim, right? Because it's constant, you know, you're doing a marathon, that's 42 kilometers. That's constant push on the push rim. And you need these specialized gloves. And this guy was wearing a dish, you know, the rubber gloves for dishwashing. And seeing his front wheel of cut out plywood with nailed rubber around it. And I finished 2 hours for that marathon, which is average. You know, usually the guys are finishing at 1:36, you know, 1 hour and 36. And I finished 2 hours. And I had a pretty good top of the line racing chair. And this guy finished at 2 hours and 15 minutes. It was really a humbling experience, to be honest with you. So it's not just really about winning, you know, respecting this guy's commitment and you know, to finish the race. So since then, you know, I hooked up with a friend in Calgary, where we started collecting racing chairs, you know, old, you know, not old, used, you know, used sports equipment. We started, you know, donating that in other parts of Asia, not just in the Philippines, in Laos, in Thailand, you know, project in South America. So just a matter of giving back. We're so, a lot of us Canadian para athletes and other in other wealthy countries, you know, a lot of our sports equipment are just hanging in the garage and not being used, you know. So we were able to do that. It's a matter of, yeah, and actually Steve and I, we went to the Philippines and organized a sports clinic there. And we are still supporting other athletes there now. We continue to support athletes there so that they can continue to pursue their sports endeavors. It's such a privilege to be in this country. And I tell you, a lot of para athletes in this country, a lot of their sports equipment just hanging in the garage, not being used proudly. So, hey, we started talking, hey, why don't you donate some of those?
There's another thing there that's it's very, very minor, but at the start of the book, it was important to me to show Tony climbing trees and swimming, because when I first met Tony, I was so clueless and ignorant and stupid when he was telling me about climbing trees and swimming. And I said, what? You only have one good leg. How can you do that? You know, and he said, I can do so many things. And so I made it a point that in this children's book that that Tony is shown like swimming and climbing trees and doing things that his able-bodied friends are also doing. And so that's an event that occurs in real life. And I think it's important for children to see that, you know, there's no difference. They can do a lot of things, which I didn't know. And I was thinking maybe other people didn't know that as well. So that's why it was important for me to show that part as well.
My childhood was a lot of fun because, you know, back in the Philippines, you know, especially when we were in the country, and, you know, whatever my brother did, I would do it. If they're on the trees, I would climb the trees. If they're in the swimming pool, I would jump in the pool.
Okay, so now we have some questions from our collective members. And this one is for you, Tony. It's from Avery. And she says, Tony, as you're the newly appointed advocate for persons with disabilities in Alberta, and congrats for that from a fellow Albertan, what is one thing you wish to accomplish with this role and Tony's wheels?
Yeah, thank you for that question. You know, earlier I talked about empowerment, right? And the benefits of sports and how sports is empowering. I bring that in my new role now as a disability advocate. I really would like to promote self-advocacy, you know. You know, that, and that's one of the values of my office, is that we know we promote self-advocacy, you know, by providing the people that contact our office the pertinent and current information, teaching them or helping them to navigate programs and services and things like that. That we are able to help them empower themselves so that they can gain respect, you know, and dignity by doing this themselves and being able to live a fulfilling life, you know, in really an inclusive and accessible community, we hope, right? So I really promote empowerment through our, you know, our best practice in our office. So I hope that answers the question.
Great. So having both gone to the University of Alberta in Edmonton, how have you seen the city's attitude towards Asian people and people with disabilities change over the years? And are you hopeful it's moving in the right direction to inclusivity?
Absolutely. Not just in Edmonton, but really every time I come home to this country from my travels, really, I'm, oh, every time I land and go through the immigration at the airport, I said, it's so nice to be home, you know, that, you know, even in Europe, you know, I have to traverse through cobblestones, you know, and things like that. It's so difficult in a wheelchair. Where, yes, we have still many walls to break through in this country, in this city, in Edmonton. But overall, you know, I'm not complaining, you know. It's also, when you talk about accessibility and inclusion, it's really societal attitude, you know. And we're breaking through that there. It's, in my view, the disability community also has the responsibility to continue to inform and to educate, you know. We need to be graciously bold in educating and bringing awareness by telling our own stories, you know. Don't be shy, you know, like this book, you know. Don't be shy in telling our stories. So, you know, that's when we're able to inject, to educate, you know, knowledge is important. And in time, we will be able to reap, you know, good results. I'm hopeful for that. So, Mila, if you want.
Yeah, so while we're talking about over 35 years of first coming here, and then over that time, I feel that the city of Edmonton is really more diverse, and there's really more advocacy for different voices and perspectives to be represented and to be respected. Some companies and also offices, as well as community organizations, have equity, diversity, and inclusion strategies and plans, and are working together. And there are, for example, the Edmonton Arts Council or the Alberta Foundation for the Arts, who are actively promoting the working together of communities. You know, before, if you were a Filipino and you had this art, then they would fund you, but now they're more advocating and promoting that different communities work together towards, for example, a mural or a festival, and so on and so forth. So I think there's a big change. It's going the right direction. There's still a lot of, as Tony said, walls to break through. There's still a lot of work, but I'm very hopeful that there's more awareness and there's more representation, and that there's more planned and strategic education and information being distributed, so that people respect each other and that are open to other perspectives and other experiences, and open to more cultural appreciation. And I think one of the things that helped with that is the very diverse availability of ethnic cuisines in Edmonton, as well as festivals and, you know, food and music and performances. It always is a very good start to become aware of another culture.
Very well said, Mila. So this next question is for both of you. What are the two of you up to nowadays? Are there any projects that you are working on or will be working on that you can share with our listeners?
I'm working together with people from the Latino community and Syrian community in creating a mural. It's called Walls of Color. And we will be creating a mural representing just the immigration journeys into Edmonton. And we are also trying to work with the Indigenous community with this, so that all four communities will be telling our stories and somehow reflecting this in images that will merge together in this mural. And I'm also working on an illustrated anthology of immigration stories. It's called Stories of Courage and Kindness. So we're trying to get young people to talk to their parents or grandparents or the elders of the community to find out more about how they immigrated over or, you know, within their families to learn more of their stories, and then have that illustrated into a comic book or just an illustrated short stories rather than just text. So those are my current projects.
Yeah, Mila and I, we started talking about, as a disability advocate, we started talking about reaching out to newcomers. Reaching out to newcomers and you know, educating about disability rights, you know, and that we should not hide our children with disabilities at home, you know. Everyone in this country has equal rights as everyone else. And, you know, so I haven't tapped into that yet in my role as a disability advocate. And with Mila's connection in the newcomers community, you know, we'll be able to work together in touching that part of the population in Edmonton. And really across the province.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I can't wait to keep up on what you folks are up to. But yeah, last but not least, our last question is there anything you would like to say to our CITR listeners? Any like last words?
Thank you for this opportunity to be included in your radio and your programming. And just want to say, I think I want to encourage people to just share your stories. And in doing that, we encourage and inspire each other. So share your stories. Each story is a legacy and it's valuable.
Yeah, likewise, absolutely. Thank you so much for this opportunity. You know, I really